I am all in.
All In with Scott Patterson, an iHeartRadio podcast.
Hey, everybody. We're back with another episode. I'm Scott Patterson, and this is the I Am All In podcast with iHeartRadio and 111 Productions. Star-crossed lovers and other strangers that perhaps got soft and got butthurt like Dean did when he got blown up by the saucy blue eyes from that innocent Gilmore. Rory, who did not respond to his I love you. Riley, if you could give us the synopsis for the episode, please.
This is episode 16, Star-Crossed Lovers and Other Strangers, air date March 8th, 2001. Emily agrees to let Rory miss the weekly dinner so she can celebrate her three-month anniversary with Dean. Elsewhere, the town prepares for a festival that celebrates the founding of Stars Hollow.
Oh my goodness. What happened to Dean? I mean, in what, 12 episodes, he goes from like, I'm from Chicago, I'm not from here, hey, come on over here, I'm going to kiss you in the cabbage section in front of everybody, and, you know, I'm talking to your mom, and now is it my turn to speak, and hey, let's watch Boogie Nights. What happened to that guy? And all of a sudden, he's sitting in his junky car that he's building for this girlfriend that's never got a chance to be safe or pass inspection at the DMV. And he says, I love you. And big matzo ball hanging out there. Amy, am I wrong? Giant, like that's the biggest matzo ball hanging out there I've ever seen on television.
And it was she awkward. Just,
but her face, that sweet, innocent 16-year-old face with those blue eyes, like open wide, like.
I was waiting for her to say, thank you. Thank you.
Oh,
that's a big swing and a miss for Dean. I mean, wow. I've been there. I've been that guy. It's happened to me. It's not a place.
It went so dark, though. I didn't think it needed to be a breakup.
Yeah, but that's that personality. That guy, he was so humiliated. Dean was so humiliated. He had no other choice but to save face. Right? Mm. Just shows you he's not the guy for her. Right? He's not cool, calm, and collected that he came. See, I knew it. I had him nailed from the beginning. That tough guy act, it's just an act. He's just a softy underneath, and if he doesn't get his way, he gets butthurt. And he runs home to mommy and cries. But these are kids, you know? These are kids. But he started out so, he was such a cool dude, right?
Yeah, bold. Bravado. Oh,
this great looking kid, and he had his act together, and he was just contained, and he was cool. And then he's sitting in a junky Corvair going, I love you.
Is it a Corvair?
I thought it was. Was it a little Corvair?
It could be. I don't think we know.
Yeah, right? Little junkyard Corvair that he was. Oh. Yeah, my God. My God. What a scene. I was so happy. I was so bored with that whole thing because he was like, he had softened to the point where it was like, Jesus, what's going to happen now? And then he dumps her. He breaks up.
Yeah, that was
it's like, wow.
Rough.
Yeah.
And how about you?
And she was completely justified in just sort of staring at him like, what? This is moving very quickly. 3 months. Boy, I tell you, being a guy... An 18-year-old guy, 17-year-old guy, feeling that much for a girl and actually saying those words. Boy, that's tough.
Most teenage girls would have said it back. She's just a unique teenage girl.
She's a Gilmore.
Yeah.
It's like, listen, man, we're in a junkyard. And I mean, we're not even in a used car lot, which would be bad enough, right? For a Gilmore. I mean, maybe she could have dealt with like a used Jeep or something.
She handled it well. She sort of tried to explain to him, like, you know, my family, you know, my life, like, I can't just be as comfortable with this as you are.
Right.
But he was not having it.
Right.
He's so mad. And she was like, don't be mad. And it was like, yeah, don't be mad.
How can you not be mad? You just you just put your cards on the table. I mean, what if I was sitting there in that booth, right? Because I do remember that scene where, you know, my all, I am all in scene, right? What if Lorelai just said, oh, that's nice. Anyway, should we order?
Wait, we have so much to talk about because Rachel.
Yeah, wow, Rachel shows.
What did you think watching yourself with Rachel?
I don't know. I think I, you know, acting wise, I just think it was just too much on me. I didn't like what I did behind the counter with the pausing, and I was really kind of I was kind of mugging a little too much. I think it was, I was pushing everything, and I didn't really particularly like. I liked the scene with Lorelai on the bench during the festival.
I did too. Did you see the knee touch when you touched her knee?
Yeah, with a fist. With a fist. You know, it was
that
like
a solid move, though. Solid.
But was it open handed or was it like a bro?
No.
Bro punch.
It was somewhere between bro and best friends.
Yeah.
It was subtle, but it was so sweet. Yeah. I really was like, wow.
Yeah, I like that scene. I really like that scene because that scene had, that was, you know, that had a fine line, you know, where you had to sort of, you know, walk down the middle of that scene. I did not like my reaction to her when she came in. I liked the scene. I thought the girls were great, and I didn't serve that scene very well. I think I was just too wide-eyed and shocked. And it's like, okay, so that's the girl we were talking about. That's the model chick, right? That's the girl. That's the girl in my dreams who hurt me, so who got me butthurt. Maybe I said I love you to her. And she says, well, I've got to go clean my lenses.
Yeah, whole thing was interesting because Luke does really sort of reveal, like, she's not one for staying.
No, she broke my will heart, and she went she went off to the Middle East, then she went off to, you know, she went off to war zones. You know, she's a serious photographer. So she's, you know, just a tough thing to deal with. But I don't know.
You see how comfortable Luke is with Lorelai.
Mm-hmm. That's the point.
Yeah.
That's the point. It's easy. It fits like a glove. Yeah. We're just such good friends. Our rhythm is just there. You know, we pick up immediately on that rhythm. It's like we're on stage playing jazz. Other's moves, right? So it just fits, it works, it's great. And that was the whole point. It's the rhythm of it. So maybe my reaction wasn't so bad because that really stopped the music. That's like the needle goes off the record and she walks in and everybody's just staring at her. So anyway, that's how I played it. I don't think I could.
Yeah, and Lorelai had to sort of take control. Mm-hmm. Lorelai had to handle it for you,
right? And so she got to act as a friend, like, oh, poor guy's heart, his poor wounded heart, I must help here, this poor guy. I don't know. It's like everything that happens to that guy, it just makes him look better in her eyes lately, right? So,
I mean, and now she's got a threat. I don't know what the word is. She's got competition. Mm-hmm. Rachel's back.
She's handling it well.
I thought so too.
She's handling it. I think Lorelai's handling it beautifully.
Yeah, and probably because she's self-aware enough to know, like, I've dated Max recently. Mm-hmm. I've dated other guys. Who am I to be mad about this?
Right.
Yeah, I thought that too.
Plus, she's missing Max and dialing his number and, you know, this kind of
thing.
I really miss Max. Chase, how great was... Come on. How do you like your scotch, Chase? How do you, what do you want to drink? Scotch neat. Oh, then I'll get it for you. That's fine.
And you knew Richard was like, this guy is no good. Lets her crawl out the window. So good.
I thought that was some of the funniest stuff that I'd seen so far. Those scenes with Chase and Lorelai and the Gilmore parents were just supreme. Just hysterically funny. I mean, her messing around with all the little tchotchkes, you know, the crystal little tchotchkes.
So good. I know we'll talk about it later, but the misery reference was just so genius.
Oh, God. Funny stuff.
Oh, my God.
Funny stuff. You know what? We have somebody who could be regarded as my nemesis in this show. It's not Darth Vader, but it's kind of the Darth Vader of Stars Hollow. Mr. Taylor Dozy of Dozy's Market. Michael Winters, the incomparable, the brilliant Michael Winters is waiting in the wings. I cannot wait to talk with him. He is such a great guy and such a great actor. And I miss working with him so much. And I can't wait to talk to him. So after we come back, we're gonna saddle up and ride the prairie with Taylor Dozy. Okay, so I'm Scott Patterson. This is I Am All In Podcast, iHeartRadio. We'll be right back after these words with Michael Winters. Ladies and gentlemen, Michael Winters is in the waiting room. He's in the green room eating lollipops and striped candies and caramels. And
I made it.
How you doing, buddy?
Huh? Mr. President, I'm great. How are you?
I'm great. Where are you? Where are you from? Where are you right now?
I'm in Seattle.
You're in Seattle.
Yeah.
Wow. So listen, now we've got you. We probably don't have you for long because you're in such demand. I want to start from the beginning. There's a bunch of fan questions, bunch of listener questions. They want to know things. We got to give them.
Yeah.
We got to give them some answers here. They want to know how'd you get the role of Taylor. And did you know when you got the role of Taylor, you would play the part for many years? That's from Kristen in Boulder, Colorado.
Boulder. I spent a summer in Boulder. Beautiful place. Beautiful place.
Absolutely.
I got the job in the normal way. It was another audition like anything else. And I went and I did a callback and I got the job. Now, when they offered the job, they said it was a four episode arc, mm-hmm. with the possibility of recurring. Well, every job you got at that time was that,
right.
You know, yeah. So it will probably recur. It could recur, you know, and you just sort of stop thinking about that. Mm-hmm. So when I started it, I had no idea it would be more than four episodes. And in fact, I told them, you know, I was going back and forth between Seattle and LA, because I had theater connections up here, and I would come up here and do plays, and then I'd go down there and audition and stuff. So I said, okay, four episodes. Well, how long will that run? He said, great, because right after that, I'm going back to Seattle to look for theater work up there. And they said, that's fine. We'll do the four episodes, and then if we ever need you again, we'll fly you down. So I did the four episodes, and after that, it never stopped for 7 years and reboot. And, you know, it wasn't constant, so I did come up to Seattle every year. Mm-hmm. I'd come up. I would come up at the end of what used to be pilot season. I guess there isn't one anymore. And come up because the theaters I worked at, a lot of them played over the summer. So I'd come back up here for a few months, and I would always say, every one of those 7 years, I think, I said, okay, I'm going back to Seattle to do plays. I won't be done there till late in August. You know, and that's about when you start again, right? I said, just don't put me in the first episode. Every single time they put me in the first episode. And so several years in a row, I'd be doing a show, and on a Sunday night, I'd have a friend waiting, and they'd streak me to the airport, and I'd get a late flight, which, of course, you can't get anymore after the, you know, after 9/11, mm-hmm. it stopped. And I would fly down someplace and, like, spend the night in Las Vegas or something and get a quick hop over, work all day Monday, which was my day off, and then into Tuesday, and then fly back up here for a show on Tuesday night. Wow. That happened four or five seasons in a row. Wow. But I, you know, I didn't mind doing it. It was great to be able to come back. But it was a smaller part. So I I didn't have to be there all the time.
A lot of dialogue.
And I only lived about 10 minutes tops from my house to Warner Brothers, mm-hmm. even on bad traffic days. So
right.
It was really a cinch.
So let me ask you this. So you did recurring roles on shows like Cheers and Frasier. And what was it? How was Gilmore Girls different?
Well, it was long. Those other ones were, they didn't even really, I wouldn't even call them recurring. They were guest star parts. And some of them were just, you know, one episode. A couple of them I did more than one episode, but they were small. They didn't go on for very long, but Gilmore Girls ended up going on for 7 years. And then the Netflix reboot after that. Mm-hmm. So it was pure luck. And I'll always be grateful for mm-hmm. The house I'm sitting in right now, I was able to put a down payment on because of all the time I'd spent on Gilmore Girls.
Yeah. So what did you think of the character of Taylor Dozie? What did you, Michael, personally think of it?
I just thought he was a jerk, but it was, he was funny. And I always thought, I think what happens is, you know, an hour long show, that's a lot of stuff, a lot of time to fill. And I thought they'd get to a point where they had some time to film. They'd say, okay, make Taylor do something annoying and we'll spread it out over the episode. And I'd get there and be a thorn under somebody's saddle, you know, and cause trouble. And then it would all get cleared up. So it was a fun distraction, I think, from the romance and stuff that the girls had. I was one of the local eccentrics.
Right.
And my job was to annoy people. But I loved it. It was great.
It was always fun going to work knowing I was going to be sparring with you.
Exactly. If I remember correctly, the first episode was a Halloween episode, and I wanted to put pumpkins and stuff all around the door of the diner, and you didn't want it.
Right.
And so we tussled. That's how we started.
Right, right.
And continued for years and years. It's very good. You and I personally got along very nicely.
Yes.
To sort of buffer that.
Yeah, well... It was I just love working with you. I love working with all of them, but especially you because.
No, I did too. It was great.
They were just such fun scenes to do. I mean, just that inbred conflict going on. I mean, it was just so much fun.
Always, so much fun
to play. So what did your character, what did you think of Luke? What did your character think of Luke?
Just another, somebody who didn't understand the good that I was after. You know, he was an obstruction to me making this town a better place, a greater place. And I knew exactly how to do it. If you would just let me have my way, if you would just get out of the way and let me do what I wanted to do. So, so we were always just sort of at friendly loggerheads. We were up against each other, but you know, it never came to blows or anything.
You don't feel you were misunderstood as a character, that you were just trying to take control of the town because you had good intentions.
I guess that's what I'm saying. Yeah. Nobody understood how much I had to offer and how good my ideas were and how essential it was that we did this for the town. And of course, all it did was make life impossible for everybody else. Mm-hmm. And so of course they came, you were sort of the spearhead of that, of standing up to Taylor and his wacky ideas.
So here's a question that I think a lot of people would be interested in. Were you given any amount of direction on the characterization, or did you come up with that purely yourself?
Well, it seemed to me the characterization was in the language, and you know, just like any acting job. And so I followed what I felt were the clues to the character from that. So yeah, everybody got direction. Mine was usually go a little faster. pace it up, because I was just used to the stage where you're able to sort of expand and take the time that you need. This is just a whole different world. And when I finally hooked into after a few episodes, then it got easy because then I was able to make all those mental connections just happen immediately. Mm-hmm. Instead of thinking about something, just react to it, you know? And so it gave me this kind of rhythm of jumping around from one thing to another. Yes, okay, fine, whatever you say. But the important thing is, and I'd move right on to the next thing. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, that kind of direction it really helped me sort of focus on what they were after and how they wanted to get mm-hmm. there.
So we're in season one still. We're about halfway through, maybe a little beyond halfway. But you know, it's a lot of Dean. What did Taylor think of Dean?
He didn't sort of get in my viewfinder. You know. Yes. Oh, that's Rory's boyfriend. I guess I don't know, but he didn't have anything. I don't remember him having much to do with how the town ran itself. And that was my most important thing. Mm-hmm. You know, how we make it better, how we become the greatest little town in America, you know. And he was off dating that girl, mm-hmm. You know, Rory. Mm-hmm. And so I didn't have much opinion about him, you know. I just, as long as he kept out of my way and didn't try to stop me from doing what I wanted to do. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Most of the guys were like that. And I didn't know Jared much at all. Now, Milo, I knew a lot better. And Matt Zuckery later on, we were a little more friendly, you know, just... the actors were, but those guys were almost in like a different story, a different world, a different level that I, they were there and, you know, I'm sort of aware of their presence, but I never ran up against them like I would you and, well, lots of other people mm-hmm, mm-hmm. that I would
so,
bounce off.
You know, your character is very much involved in the town celebrations and overseeing oh, yeah. them and getting permitted properly and that kind of thing. What were your favorite celebrations?
I loved the art one. You know, the live, I don't know what season that was. The thing that was based on the thing from Laguna Beach where they did the tableau vivant of famous paintings. That was so much fun to be involved in, although it was difficult because it was another one of those things like the town meetings where I wasn't in the heart of the scene, but I'm running them, you know, I'm narrating them or something, or I'm trying to keeping them going. So that most of the shooting of all of those would be on everybody else. And then at the end of the day, the cameras would turn around and then I'd have to do all my stuff at the end, which was all stuck in the middle. You know, so that I remember particularly that one of the living art paintings was difficult because we worked all night mm-hmm. and then it got to the end of the night and I sat around in a tux all day and did virtually nothing, you know, little bits here and there. And then I had all of these introductions to do and everybody went home. All the crew was dying to get on the road, just get out of there. And I had to do these long, complicated speeches with a lot of Italian names in it. And the guy who was directing that episode said, I don't want to put any extra pressure on you, but where you're standing, the sun is going to hit you in the face in about 20 minutes. We need to get this all done in 20 minutes. Early on in the very first season, because it was the first time I had it, we did the reenactment, Revolutionary War reenactment stuff. And we had all that stuff in the snow and the uniforms and the rifles and everything. And, Huddleston, what was his first
name?
David Huddleston, mm-hmm. who was the mayor. Everybody thinks I'm the mayor. I was never the mayor. David was the mayor. He did two episodes, I think was all he mm-hmm. ever did. But he sort of ran it. And he looked out for us. There were a bunch of us who had to kneel in the snow all night long. It was another night shoot. And we just had to kneel there because we were in these styrofoam things that looked like snowbanks because the snow got bigger as the night went on. And he finally just sort of said, listen, you've got to let these people get up. You have to let him get out of here. He took care of us all. And I was always appreciative of that. Mm-hmm. But all of those celebrations, I always had something fun to do.
Right.
Running around, trying to keep him going, trying to, you know, troubleshoot as things went on. The food fair there, which was, I guess, in the reboot, that was kind of fun, running around with all the countries and the food. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I loved the dance marathon when we went over to the high school out in the valley and spent the day out there. It was fun because we were in a different place and a whole different situation. And I wasn't as much in charge of that. I don't remember being, but it was fun. It was sort of fun to be around. They were all great. You know, it was always variety.
So Charlotte from Smyrna Beach wants to know if the food in Dozy's Market was real.
Well, the canned goods and the boxes were all, but the produce, only if we needed to use it, if somebody had to pick it up, then it seemed to me that the produce was real. The others, you know, they make fabulous plastic fruit. You can, you know, and vegetables, you can't tell the difference. You know, a green pepper, plastic looks like a real green pepper, especially, you know, when it's sort of at a distance. So, yeah, the canned goods, the non-perishable stuff, that was all real as far as I know. Mm-hmm. Maybe it was just the boxes. We never actually dealt with them. It was mostly in background. If anything had to be packed in a sack or, you know, anybody was checking out or anything, then that was much more likely to be real. Mm-hmm. But you couldn't grab an apple and eat it, I don't think. You'd be very careful about that.
So here's a question.
Yeah.
This is one of my questions. You know, it's 2021. We did the reboot 5 years ago. Where do you think, because I always think in terms of, you know, when I was preparing the 2016 reboot, where, you know, where has Luke been? Where is he now? That kind of thing. Where is Taylor Dozy in 2021? What is he doing right now?
Boy, probably if he can get away with it, exactly what he's always done. You know, maybe he is mayor. Maybe he... maybe he does run for mayor. In fact, he runs for, you know, there's that one episode which has some very fun stuff in it, I think, where I ran for ombudsman, who's a sort of a voice for the people, not the mayor, but somebody who could bring up problems and difficulties with the people who actually run the town, even though I felt like I was running the town. and Lorelei decided that I just won it out of hand. There never was any opposition. I just sort of got the job every year. Mm-hmm. So she decided, no, I'm going to. And she got somebody to run against me, and I can't remember who it was. But of course, everybody wanted to get rid of Taylor, so he was winning. And one of my favorite moments in the entire series for me, my fun moment was by that time they had opened that window up between the diner and the sweet shop, my sweet shop, so you could see from the diner into the sweet shop. And in the middle of the night, you and Lorelei were talking in the diner about the election and looked over and saw me sitting at the counter in my sweet shop with the lights off, looking very dejected because I was about to lose this election. And at one point I picked up a can of Ready Whip and just sprayed a mouthful of it in my mouth to make myself feel better. And she felt so bad about that, that she turned it around and, you know, sort of put the kibosh on whoever it was she was getting to run against me. And I won again.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I can only imagine that Taylor is just finding new ways to annoy everybody in town. He doesn't mean to annoy them, but he just has big ideas and great possibilities if everyone would just understand how right he was, you know. Mm-hmm. So my bet is he's doing the same thing. I don't imagine I can't imagine taking a vacation, like taking a cruise or anything like that, because who knows what would happen in his absence.
Right. What are the memories you have of the two of us getting into trouble?
Well, mostly our trouble was with each other, wasn't it? Mm-hmm. Trying to get things done and butting heads against each other.
Yeah, there were no hijinks offset.
No, we were definitely not that kind of.
It's not like you and I, after shooting was finished, we go grab a drink and get into bar fights or anything like that. We didn't do that.
Oh, you mean you and me, not Taylor and Luke?
Right. No. I think they meant Taylor and Luke. Yeah.
Yeah. No, absolutely not. I can't imagine Taylor going to the bar. Everybody would have kicked him out if he'd have tried to go, because he wouldn't have been able to go in and just sit down and have a drink. Yeah. He'd be bugging everybody about his latest project. So I think if he ever went, he'd go home and drink alone. You know, maybe he'd have a bottle of wine or something.
So what is your absolute favorite memory of the show?
Wow. The Ready Whip is the one I always think of. I love, I had to ride a horse in, and we did another sort of Civil War reenactment where I had to ride a horse, just ride it into the shot and get off the horse. I didn't even have to get on the horse, which was great because I couldn't do it. And I was in this huge uniform with a sword and everything. And that was fun. And they sent me out, because I am not used to horses, they sent me out to a ranch way the hell out in the valley to work with the guy who was the horse wrangler. And he was very, very helpful and helped me get on and ride. And I rode around a whole bunch that day, just around a corral, you know. So that the whole event was really, really fun. And I remember that being great. My favorite moments often were the town meetings, because Liz and I would sit up on that dais and not do anything most of the day, just throw the lines in. You know, we wouldn't even get dressed. We'd get makeup on and just sit around in our street clothes and talk. And she was so full of stories. She knew and had worked with everybody. And we had a thing we'd do where somebody would start singing a song, you know, because she was a singer, and she'd sing old saloon songs, you know, old standards. But neither of us knew all the lyrics. So one or the other of us would start and do three lines, and then the other person would try to remember the next three lines. It was just this endless game. And I loved that. I loved the day that Carole King was there and did. That was the reboot again, I think. And we worked all day, and she was fantastic. We had great fun and worked all day on that one scene, because it was all of us in a circle. And so everybody had to get their separate shots. And at the end of the day, you know, everybody was tired and ready to go home. And she said, well, you can all go home if you want, but I'm just going to stay around and play the piano. If anybody wants to stay, that's fine. And she did half hour.
Nice.
At that beat up old out of tune piano, and nobody left.
Right.
Everybody stayed, and that was a high point. Yeah. That was just so amazing.
Yeah,
so great.
I heard about that. I wish I was there.
Jeez. Oh, it was sublime.
I know.
Those things were great.
Yeah. That never happened with Sebastian Bach, though. You know, no, but he said, "Hey, stick around. You guys can go home, but stick around. I'm going to screech for, you know, half an hour."
Yeah, not his style at all. That was another fun one with all of Amy's favorite pop stars as street troubadours.
Right.
You know, when she got them all on the show, that was sort of amazing to have them all around. Only half of whom I know, being as old as I am, I didn't know who everybody was.
Right.
That was great.
So if you want a period product that looks out for your body, your lifestyle, and the planet, you've got to try Flex. Flex is innovating period care with products that are body safe, made for comfort, and made to keep you moving.
There's the Flex Disc, which is one-time use menstrual disc that fits perfectly inside your body. One Flex Disc can be worn up to 12 hours and holds as much flow as 3 super tampons.
And if you want to go zero waste and have the planet love you even more, pick up the Flex Cup, a reusable menstrual cup that Cosmo rated number one.
With helpful videos, in-depth diagrams, even gifts, and Flexperts available to walk you through the entire process, you'll never go back to products from the past once you try Flex.
So say goodbye to cramps, put sex back on the table, and lend Mother Nature a hand.
Go to flexfits.com/all in and use code ALLIN for 20% off Flex Disc Starter Kits or 10% off your first Flex Cup plus free U.S. shipping.
That's code ALLIN at flexfits.com/all in.
So are you ready for rapid fire? We do a thing called rapid fire. I'm going to fire questions at you, and you got to answer as fast as you can.
I'll do my best.
Here we go.
Okay, hit me.
All right. How do you take your coffee?
I don't drink coffee.
Can you smell? How dare you?
I know.
You don't drink coffee.
People say, how can you be in the theater? I never drank coffee.
Can you? Well, it's good. Can you smell snow?
Yes. Oh, absolutely. I grew up in the Midwest. Yeah. I know it's coming.
Are you team Logan, team Jess, or team Dean?
Hard to say. Like I said, I knew those two guys much better. So I guess I'd have to say Logan. I liked him a lot. I thought he was
okay. The
real deal.
Who's the daddy?
In what situation? I mean, that's a thing that shifts, wouldn't you say?
the Rory's baby. At the end of the Netflix thing, she's pregnant.
I don't know. I wonder if they know.
So you don't know. You can't speculate. You don't want to speculate.
I don't want to. I want to leave it mysterious. Uh-huh. I like that. Okay. Cliffhanger. Maybe it means we'll all be back.
Fat chance.
For his graduation from high school or something.
Yeah. Best memory of Gilmore Girls.
Well, geez, so hard to say. I just loved starting. I loved coming. You know what was great was coming back for the reboot. And everybody knew how long the shoot was going to be. So there was none of that, oh my God, will we ever be finished with this? Mm-hmm. And I think that was great for you guys who were always there. Mm-hmm. But when we came back for that, it was like a reunion. And everybody was free and loose and knew they were only going to be doing it for 3 months. Everybody was wild about being employed again, you know, on a place that was such wonderful work to do. It was a pleasure to look forward to going to a show that was good, you know, that we were on a show that had quality. Mm-hmm. And because, you know, we all did bits on other shows where it was like, oh God, thank God I'm not on this week after week after week, you mm-hmm. know?
Yeah.
This one was, I'd love to be on this week after week after week when I could be there. Right. So that was a great one. Coming back for that, that was a big deal.
Yeah. Show that you're binge watching right now.
Oh, gee, I just got done with Hacks. I watched Hacks. That was the last one. What happened to me is I've only had a smart TV for a few months. And when I got it, I got Turner Classic Movies again, which I had not had on my other one for 3 years. So I am now up to my ears in old movies, and I haven't been watching streaming things. Mm-hmm. But I did watch Hacks because I like her, and I'd heard it was good. And she used to work in Seattle.
Who, her?
Before Jean Smart.
Oh, okay.
Who was the main person in that. And so a lot of people I know in town know her, and they all said, oh, you should see Hacks because she's really great. And I had just seen Mayor of Easttown. She just got done doing, and she was so fabulous in that. So that was my last, big binge.
Okay. Cast member you texted most recently.
Well, you, for this, mm-hmm. but before that, who would it be? Well, cast member, not a cast member, but, Valerie Campbell,
okay.
who hooked me up with this woman named Taryn in New Zealand, who has already written a big encyclopedia book about Gilmore Girls, and she's writing a new one now. And she wanted to talk to me, and Valerie hooked us up. So Val and I were trading emails.
Okay. By reason. All right, Valerie, it is. One word to describe Gilmore Girls.
Sweet.
Good. Are you familiar with the creepy clown pillow?
No.
Good. I shan't explain. I shan't explain it.
Was it something on the show?
Yeah, it was a pillow that's in Lorelai's living room.
And we
keep track of it. We're a little bit. Well, some people on the show are a little bit obsessed with it, and they want to spot it in every episode and wear it.
I can understand that. Yes. Oh, well, now I'm going to look for it.
Yes, Michael, it's been a pleasure.
It's so good to see you again.
Good to see you.
What are you up to besides this?
I'm just my wife and I are raising our son. He's 7 now, and
he's
7, and he's in second grade, and we're just living a normal life, you know. And
that is great. I'm so happy for you.
Yeah,
it's
just
great to see you and hear your voice.
Yeah, it's good to see you too, my friend. I hope we get to work again soon on something. If it's not Gilmore Girls, something.
Yeah, any place.
Yeah.
You're one of the people who just made it a homey place to be.
Well, you too, buddy. Thank you.
Nice place to go to work.
Yeah. Yeah.
I loved it. And I've always been very fond of you. Thanks a lot. And thanks for asking me to do this.
You got it, pal. We'll have you back on. You're the best.
Do. Yeah. When you get farther into the season, I forgot to, Amy had left me a thing saying, look at this episode. And I just didn't do it. I forgot to do it. So if it happens again, let me get a leg up on it, because I haven't watched them for years.
It will. We'll be in touch for sure.
Yeah, it was really fun. And God knows I don't have all that much to do. So my time is free.
All right, buddy.
Thanks, Scott. Thanks, Amy, all too. Right.
Take care, buddy.
You're the best. Talk to you soon.
All right. Be well, my friend.
Bye-bye.
Oh, my God.
He is so lovely. I literally was texting Danielle going, this guy is so great.
He's such a peach. He's literally a peach.
Just a total class act.
Yes.
And you know, he was the kind of guy, he was such a professional. And everybody knew he had this tight schedule, and he was always doing a play. And he would, you know, have to really put together, you know, he had a ton of dialogue to do. Always.
Yeah.
And rapid fire. And he always came to the set fully off book, fully prepared.
Wow.
Totally professional. It was amazing. It was just amazing. He's an acting machine. And he's so good at it.
Doing this,
mm-hmm.
every single person that we have spoken to loved making this show.
Yeah.
And they want to come on with you. And we have so many more people coming up. And it's like, that means something. So it's like, we love watching this show, and all of you loved making it. It's really touching.
We knew that we were in something very, very unique. We did. And it didn't take long for us to realize it. I mean, I realized it the minute I read the script before the first audition, that it was very, very special. And I mean, I don't think anybody could have predicted what it would become, what it has become. But we knew that it was very high quality, and that we were very lucky to be involved in it, because it would have been very easy not to cast us. You know, thank God they did. I think that's, we really miss, because we've all had experiences prior and especially after the show with other productions, and they fall well short of how that show was run, the people involved, the quality of the writing and the actors. And it was just wonderful. It was just a wonderful experience. Yeah. You would hope that something like that could go on forever and ever and ever, but maybe that's what it makes it so special, is that it lasted a finite period of time that will be forever be frozen in the emotional memory banks of the planet Earth.
I think it does mean a lot to people that love the show.
Yeah.
How much you guys loved doing it.
Yeah.
It's really contagious. And then you're just like, oh, it makes me love it more. You know,
you know what they don't see is, and a lot of them do know, the road that we were on to get to that point in our careers where we had a shot at something like that. And then you find yourself in the belly of the beast, as it were. I mean, there you are, you know, maybe 10 years prior, you know, I was in New York and I was sweating it out, man, and doing off-Broadway theater and off-Broadway theater and acting classes and no money and hustling and you know, working jobs till 5 a.m. And just really trying to make things happen and auditioning for agents and getting rejected and, you know, going on commercial auditions and getting rejected. And every once in a while you get one and you could eat for a couple of months. And, you know, there was a time where I was eating, I could not afford Kraft macaroni and cheese because it was 99 cents a box. I had to go for Springfield because it was like 33 cents a box. And then maybe I'd steal a potato. And I think everybody's been there. And it was just like, you're just, but you love what you do. You believe in what you're doing. And then here you are, you find yourself with people that you admire and respect. And you're on this show and the critics love it. And the network loves it. And limousines and then the parties and then the this and the celebrities that you meet. Because we didn't feel like celebrities. I mean, we were, but we didn't feel like it. We felt like the new people, you know, that got invited to the party somehow and we didn't belong. Yeah. I remember I went to a Golden Globe party before, after the Golden Globes in like 2000 or 2001. And I saw, you know, I saw the most stunning, stunning looking woman I've ever seen in my life. And it was Charlize Theron. And she was surrounded by a gaggle of like short handlers. And here she was, the statuesque, like queen of the Amazonian beauty of a human being. And it was shocking. And I was like, I was with Yannick. I was with Yannick and we just stared at her like, good Lord, what are we doing in this room? We are not worthy. And Pacino was over there. And this, you know, it's like, so we felt like, you know, kids in a candy store.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, we all struggled. We all came from, you know, very humble beginnings, I think. And I think, I mean, even if Ed Herman were alive to tell his story, you know, what he went through in New York to get to the level that he got to.
Yeah.
I mean, everybody has their story and it's just, and you here you are and you're making money and you buy a house and you're going on vacations and people want your autograph. And it's like, it's wild.
Well, that's like Michael saying he bought that house that he's in now because of Gilmore Girls money. And that was like, wow. And he doesn't take it for granted. It feels like everyone that we've had on appreciates the show as the fans do. So cool.
I had a little studio apartment in West Hollywood. I stayed in there for the first 3 years of the show. I was afraid to buy a house.
Yeah.
And my accountant's like, you need to buy a house now. I said, well, I don't want to buy a house. I like where I am. I'm used to this. It's like, you know, it's like, I didn't want to come out of my cave. I'd been there for so long. And he said, well, you have a decision to make. You either have to buy a house or you have to write the government a check for this amount of money if you don't. I said, let's buy a house. So I was kind of forced to do it. And it's a nice position to be in. But I mean, I never thought I would be able to afford a home, especially in LA. And even back then, home prices were high. It's just a wild. It's like, and then you think of the, you know, I think of those early years a lot when I first started studying in New York and the craziness of that city and how wonderful all those experiences were, but all of the work that you put in, and then there you are, you're working with a Michael Winters in a candy shop and lighting it up. And it's like, wow, you know, all the training pays off, all the years, all the blood, sweat and tears are just paying off. Yeah, it's a strange profession, you know. It's feast or famine, and we definitely feasted for 7 years. And then you see the craft service table, and it's just filled with food, and you're like, okay, I'm going to go over there now.
Better take some of this home.
Oh my goodness! You know, I hadn't worked in a couple of years after Gilmore was over, and then I did a couple of episodes of I was working in independent films, and you know, they don't have huge budgets for craft service or food or anything like that. I mean, they do what they can. They're great about it. But and then I did a couple of episodes. I did an arc on 90210 and drove down to Manhattan Beach where they're filming in these. They have these.
Oh, yeah. The new 90210. Yeah. On the CW. Yeah.
Right. These great studios down in Manhattan Beach. And I walked onto the soundstage. And it was like something out of a sci-fi film. It was so large and so clean and so high tech. And the craft service table was like this stadium full of food. I've never seen anything like it in my life. And I thought, oh yeah, I forgot how good network television was, man. They really feed you.
Yeah, we don't have that at iHeart. You get like a bag of weird Oreos if you're lucky.
Bag of weird Oreos.
Yeah, like those mini Oreos are not even like full size.
They're not. You can't eat them. No, they're that's wrong. That's
maybe
wrong.
Some Nutter Butters.
You hold them lucky up and you go, that's just wrong. I cannot I cannot dunk that.
Look at how lucky you are now.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, Michael's the real deal. He's like super professional and just gracious and grateful and such a great actor to work with, man. I mean, I think he carried me more times than I'm willing to admit in scenes because his timing is so good. And I remember one time I was really tired and I just couldn't deliver the kind of energy that the scene needed. And he just, you know, he had a little talk with me and he told me he was there for me. That's all he did. He said, you know what? I'm here for you, man. You know, he was just offering support. He knew I was struggling a little bit because I had this sort of rapid fire monologue, you know, and had to really get through it. And I just wasn't getting it. And I was just like, God, am I going to be able to do this? And he just took me aside and he said, you know what? He goes, you're doing great. You're doing great. Mm. No, he says, I know how tired you are. And I know what the schedule's like sometimes. And he says, you know what? But, you know, you wouldn't be here if they didn't believe in you. You know what I mean? So you can do this in your sleep. And I just gave me a little lift and we kind of nailed the scene. And he's just a lovely guy. Lovely.
Also love that he's Team Logan, because so am I.
Yeah, well, that's the one black mark against him. All right. So anyway, that was the illustrious, lovely, talented, professional actor. The real deal, the real raw deal, Michael Winters, aka Taylor Dosey. And we're going to have him back on. What a great interview. Love the guy. Love you, Michael. Thanks for coming on. Let's dive into pop culture, guys. Riley, take it away.
I'm Riley, and this is your pop culture. So first, we have Lorelai looking like she's having so much trouble in the kitchen, and she says, I want to arrange things on a plate so they look like a pretty little hat. I want to be an Iron Chef. So Iron Chef was a Japanese cooking show from 1993 to 2002. The show was recreated in America on the Food Network from 2005 to 2018. And there are actually 800 pounds of food stocked in the pantry for each episode for the chefs to use.
Wow.
And there's 150 pounds of dry ice pumped through the studio for the filming so the fog can create dramatic moments. And finally, the schedule can be grueling with back-to-back battles. The Food Network shoots 26 episodes in just 3 weeks. Next, we have Tristan is making out with the girl against the locker, and he quotes Sonnet 43 by Elizabeth Barrett Browning. And when he says, ah, to be young and in love. And Paris says, what a shame Elizabeth Barrett Browning wasn't here to witness this. She put her head through the wall. So Elizabeth was a poet and the eldest of 12 children. She battled an illness her whole life that doctors at the time could not diagnose. And her family made a fortune from Jamaican sugar plantations.
Colonialists.
Colonialists. So Lorelai talks to Rory about the way Luke and Rachel are acting in the diner. You could tell they were still in love, and by the way they looked at each other, Luke was stuttering and Rachel was staring deeply into his eyes. And Lorelai says, and he's looking at her like she's Miss September, and she's looking at him like he's Johnny Depp. So at the time of the episode in 2001, Johnny Depp was known for his iconic roles in Edward Scissorhands and Chocolat.
Hang on, I hate to interrupt here. I have to interject here. I want to take a poll. With you ladies. Yeah, so you know what I'm going to ask. He's all that in a bag of chips, right?
Oh, yeah.
Johnny Depp is like beyond, right?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
I would say up until like 2017, but yes.
And he's gotten himself into a few pickles lately, so it's kind of like, but...
I've heard there's been some controversy.
But I love the 21 Jump Street Johnny Depp the most.
Yeah. I met him backstage at a Patti Smith concert a couple years ago in downtown LA. He was with Joe Perry.
Yeah,
Joe Perry.
They're buds.
Yeah. It's quite a story.
Yes.
I'm not telling it here, but I did make
yes.
it. Yes. He had lots of bodyguards outside the dressing
room. Was he nice, though? Was he nice?
Yeah, he was. Yeah.
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 He was all that in a bag of chips so much that he was named Sexiest Man Alive 2 years, 2003 and 2009. But he's best known for his role as Captain Jack Sparrow on Pirates of the Caribbean from 2003 to 2017. And it is a little known fact that Johnny Depp appeared on A Nightmare on Elm Street in 1984.
He got murdered by Freddy Krueger. I remember it. He got like sucked into the bed and murdered.
What a nightmare.
On Elm Street.
Rory says to Dean she would be relocated in a plastic bubble if she misses dinner for their 3-month anniversary. And Rory says, well, that special occasion better include my being relocated to a plastic bubble if my grandmother's going to let me out of the dinner. So this is in reference to The Boy in the Plastic Bubble, a 1976 drama film starring John Travolta, inspired by the lives of David Vedder and Ted DeVita. During filming, 22-year-old John Travolta and 40-year-old Diana Hyland began dating and fell in love. Sadly, Diana passed in 1977 of cancer, and then in 2020, John's wife, Kelly Preston, passed of cancer as well. Jake Gyllenhaal also played a boy in a plastic bubble in the 2001 comedy Bubble Boy.
It's a lot of bubbles.
It's a lot of bubbles. A lot of
bubbles.
When Rory says Dean is taking her to a fancy restaurant for the anniversary, there's an iconic scene in the animated film Lady and a Tramp where Tramp pushes the meatball with his nose and the lady, he and Lady share a strand of spaghetti. Lorelai says, wow, it's going to be just like Lady and the Tramp. You'll share a plate of spaghetti, but it'll be just one strand, but you won't realize it until you accidentally meet in the middle. A 1955 animated romance film produced by Walt Disney, animators used their own faces as reference for the characters. And Tramp was first called Homer, then Rags, and Bozo, even though the canine was referred to as Tramp. Lorelai says, oh God, this is where the misery reference comes in. Get ready, Amy. Oh God, Mom has gone a little crazy with the figurines here, huh? A little Kathy Bates. Although you probably haven't seen Misery, which is a good thing because Rory couldn't sleep for a week after she watched it.
Do you remember from Misery when James Caan's character like gets out and then he accidentally knocks the figurine, but he mm-hmm. catches it mm-hmm. and he puts it back up. But she was right. so cuckoo that she knew the direction it faced. Mm-hmm. And so that's how she caught him.
Get out of the cock-a-doodie car.
That movie was so, so good.
Very, very funny.
Genius reference, too. Genius. Yeah.
So for those of us that don't know, Misery is an American psychological thriller novel written by Stephen King and made into a horror film in 1990. Kathy Bates actually won the Oscar in 1991 for her role as the terrifying Annie Wilkes. The original inspiration for King's novel came from a nightmare he had while flying. And Jack Nicholson was offered the leading role of Paul Sheldon. However, he had such a difficult experience filming The Shining, he didn't want to do another King adaptation. And who can actually watch the horrific ankle scene without cringing?
I cannot. I cover my eyes. But interesting tidbit about Jack Nicholson.
I might be the only one that stood up and applauded during that scene.
Oh, that movie was so good.
Chase was explaining to Lorelai he grew up around the corner and the names of his Dobermans were Leopold and Loeb. So Nathan Leopold and Richard Loeb were famous killers who were convicted of the 1924 kidnap and murder of a young boy in Chicago. Loeb was a 1948 American psychological crime thriller film directed by Alfred Hitchcock, loosely based on the famous killers. And the film provided industry first since it took place in real time. Which is also creepy that his dogs were named after killers. Paris is trying to get to her locker, and Rory refers to the girl Tristan is making out with as Belle Watley. Paris says, yep, right behind Belle Watley. Belle Watley was a prostitute and later the madam of one of several houses in Atlanta's red light district from Gone with the Wind. Gone with the Wind was a 1939 American epic historical romance film adapted from the 1936 novel by Margaret Mitchell. Margaret Mitchell actually wrote Gone with the Wind out of boredom and had no intention of publishing the book. Lastly, we have Lorelai is having a nervous conversation with Richard, and he tells her to just sit down and put her hands in her lap. Emily comes in and asks if they're having a good conversation, and Lorelai says, yeah, we're having a great conversation, me and Maury. So this is in reference to Tuesdays with Maury, a memoir by American author Mitch Albom about a series of visits Albom made to his former sociology professor Maury Schwartz as he slowly passes from ALS. Maury's final days are spent giving his former student Mitch his final lesson of life and discuss various topics important to life and living. The book was adapted into a 1990 film directed by Mick Jackson and then into a play. That's it for pop culture.
Wonderful. A round of applause.
Yeah, well done, Riley. That's hard work.
Well done.
Thank you very much.
Okay, everybody, we're back. I'm Scott Patterson. This is the I Am All In podcast with iHeartRadio 111 Productions. We are going to get into favorite lines. Here we go. We are off and running with favorite lines. Amy, you're first.
Okay, so they're at dinner with the guy Chase, and he says, "Are you in the DAR?" And Lorelai says, "DARN." And she says, "Boy, these carrots sure are tiny."
And then she stabs them.
Freaking best.
That was good.
DARN. And they're all looking at her like, "What?" So good. So good.
Okay. Riley, you're on.
Mine's from Lorelai, and she's talking to Luke, and she says, "Hey, tomorrow, if you have time, I'm planning on despising everyone who says, hey, how's it going?"
Danielle.
My favorite line is after Dean professes his love to Rory, she goes, I love the car.
Love the car. Scott.
Amy, you stole my favorite line.
Because it's so good. I'm sorry. There was
she had some really good ones in that episode. Yes. She had some really good ones. But I really enjoyed that DAR and his tiny his carrots are so tiny. I thought that was a wonderful little piece of acting right there. Because that's all, you know, that's where you show your comedy chops.
Yeah.
You know, it's like not a lot of people can do that.
I agree. That would be hard.
It's hard. All those little subtleties and pauses and inflections and how to use your props and the whole thing. I mean, it was just wonderful to watch.
You have to nail it. Yeah.
Yeah. It's really funny. It's disconnected yet linked all together and it flows beautifully. So
Riley, what episode is after this one? We still have more to talk about. We need to turn this into a two-parter, but Riley, what episode are we all watching for next?
Next week, we have episode 17. The Breakup Part 2.
All right, everybody. That's it for the Star-Crossed Lovers and Other Strangers. And that was episode 16. And thanks for downloading. And we're going to see you next week. I think we're going to do a mini. We're going to follow with a mini discussion about the remainder of this episode because we got into a little bit and that was fun. This is one of the better episodes to dissect. But we're going to get into it a little more with this additional episode that we'll drop in the middle of a week or something like that. You know how we do it. Anyway, all the best. Love to everybody. Stay safe. I'm Scott Patterson, and this is the I Am All In podcast with iHeartRadio and 111 Productions. Be well. Don't forget, follow us on Instagram at I Am All In Podcast and email us at gilmore@iheartradio.com. Oh, you Gilmore fans, if you're looking for the best cup of coffee in the world, go to my website for my company, scottyp.com, scottyp.com, scottyp.com. Grade 1 specialty coffee.